When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown, and the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Olin, good morning. How are you doing?
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Yeah, right. You know, I feel better this morning. It was very disappointing. Just all of the we were talking it through. Apparently, the odds were fairly astronomical since the turn of the century. So that's 24, 25 years ago. The NFL teams are 1,882-0. That you win whenever you're leading by that margin with 30 seconds left. And lo and behold, they come back. They score 11 points. They force the overtime. They win the coin flip. And you're just sitting there like, this could happen. And unfortunately, you take a bad sack in the overtime and then – you can't stop them at all. It doesn't matter, as we discussed on the post game, about the situation they're in, the yards to go, etc. They overcome all of that, and they march down the field for a field goal, and the Bears lose, and they lose for the fifth time. Did it look brighter when you watched it again this morning?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because I thought about watching Caleb Williams and then watching the Bears lose, and like we're talking about the defense and watching some more of, like, for example, do they know they're going for it on 4th and 4, watching the block field goal, watching, you know, them challenge Addison's catch right on the sideline when Jonathan Owens decides to just shoulder tackle him. He looks like he's in bounds, but Coach Eberflus challenges the play anyway. And you're watching those things, but you don't want to miss Caleb Williams' development, right? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know, since 2015, I actually text Mitch this morning, last night. I've been an analyst since 2015. I've analyzed 62 wins and 96 losses, guys. So a lot of losing going on. And you don't want to let that get in the way of what you're watching maybe with this young quarterback, because a lot of us, all of us around here, are really sick of losing, right? And you get disgusted after you watch a game. So I'm trying to separate that from just watching the young quarterback make plays that maybe we've never seen around here on third downs, and watching him, the center call Coleman Shelton, who I think has played a little better, watch him call fire, alert the quarterback that it's a blitz, right? Fire, fire, fire. People use a lot of words like blood. Centers will yell blood, 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 blood in the water, right? Like there's a blitz coming. Watch the young quarterback alert the receivers and then hit and throw an absolute, I think the commentator called it a laser, which it was, to Keenan Allen on 3rd and 12. So when you're watching these games, I have to watch out not getting just like, I'm so tired of this football team losing that you miss what the young quarterback is doing, developing. And they don't get a lot of points again until late in the game when Flores basically changes his game plan, backs everybody up and gives you kind of only a three-man rush, 8 guys in coverage. And then we start getting more and more points and the block field goal and all these things that happen again to this football team. And then you wonder why, man, why do I feel kind of good about what I saw? And of course, it's because you're watching a young quarterback. And it was a month ago, guys. I have it down here. I called it built the special, right? We talked about it on this show a month ago on Monday after the Washington game. Like, look, man, this guy is doing stuff at the end of the half that's amazing, right? Like, we talked about every game you go through it since the Titans game and say at the end of half, he is leading drives, right? He is doing that. We talked about that a month ago and he does it again.
And so you watch that, Olin, and I think you start to wonder and look for reasons why to help explain the growth he's shown specifically in the last couple weeks. But I think overall, he has been steadily improving against the blitz. And yesterday, the game was billed as the king of the zero blitz against Caleb Williams, and how would he handle that? And I think that might have been overstated, but when you saw the way that he handled the blitz, you were encouraged by some of that growth. Why do you think... is it, and how collective is that in terms of giving credit for that growth? Because you see the way that he's handled the pressure, you see his completion percentage against the blitz and the production. What's happening? What is he doing? What is the offense doing that allows him to handle the blitz effectively?
Yeah, he's starting to recognize him more, right? And I think getting Braxton Jones and obviously Darnell right back, getting a little more settled on that offensive line, having Tevin Jenkins start and finish the game, right? Having Coleman Shelton and Caleb Williams' relationship grow, and then Thomas Brown. Whatever language Thomas Brown speaks, it seems like Caleb understands it. It seems like he knows exactly what Thomas Brown wants. Now, they did have a hiccup in overtime, right, where they had to delay a game penalty, get the play in, right? Get the play in, fourth and four, where we miss Keenan Allen again. The play gets in late, whoever you want to blame for that. Do they know they're going for it? Do they know they're not going for it? But this young quarterback does look a little more comfortable. I will say this. It was kind of the same thing even with Shane Waldron. They're very comfortable at home with their protection schemes, right? So now this is the first time we'll see Thomas Brown at offense coordinator on the road versus the Detroit Lions. Very, very good football team. Obviously, everybody knows that. But Caleb Williams, and you cannot argue, since Thomas Brown has come in, does not look more comfortable. Looks like he's getting the plays out there, like you're saying, David, organizing protections. And maybe some of that is the growth that he had through them letting him do it, right? A lot of us want to rush it, right? Like, why are you making him do too much? Even me, I was saying that. Like, take away some of his responsibilities. But sometimes you go through these periods in your career where you struggle. You struggle with things, but the coach keeps asking you to do it, and you get more and more comfortable doing it. And then, you know, 3-4 games later, you come out of it, and you start to play a little bit better. But Caleb, you know, even Green Bay, right, last week, he checked the protection right before the missed field goal. He checked to a 7-man protection, hit Keenan Allen. I think it was for 12 yards. So he's been doing this, guys. And I tell you what, man, it is impressive. It is impressive, no matter if you're at home or not, to go against Flores' defense, to go against Harrison Smith, who's making a lot of checks on the field, to recognize the blitzes. And then, I mean, the throws, right? I mean, guys, the throws he was making. There were guys there to pick it off, right? It wasn't like these guys were wide open. And as we're talking about NFL windows, and he was, I mean, it was looked like the guys were too slow to get to his ball, right? And then obviously there was a throw to Swift on a scramble drill. I don't know, I think both his legs are off the ground. We just kind of watched some things yesterday that we haven't saw around here a lot, and that's why you leave even after the fifth loss in a row, even after, like I just told you guys, I have analyzed now 96 losses since 2015. Even after all that, you wonder why you leave thinking, man, this guy is improving. This guy is developing. And you can give credit to Thomas Brown. I think he's doing a great job out there calling plays, making Caleb a little more comfortable. But I think a lot of that credit just goes to Caleb for continuing to grow, continue to develop. Kerry Joseph, his quarterback coach, everybody, right? When a quarterback starts to develop, everyone can take a bow. We don't want to give it to Eberflus, but Eberflus is helping him develop too. Everything goes into this young quarterback playing better football.
This segment with Olin Krutz is sponsored by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Visit online or their Elmhurst and Lyle showrooms. And I'm glad you mentioned that fourth down, because Eberflus apologized in the post game about the confusion with that, where they were going to go with the kicking team, and then they had to get them off the field. I think Caleb gets back on the field. There's like 25 seconds left. He doesn't get the play clearly in his helmet. I believe he said he ran the wrong play there. So they're at this crucial fourth down, and they've wasted time, and they haven't communicated, and the coach says, well, it's on me. I should have. Well, of course it's on you, and it should have been communicated, and it ends up you know, with another wasted chance. And I think that there has been a lot of that stuff going on. And by the way, he's now 0-4 on the year in challenges, if that matters to anyone. And I think he's 2-8 in his career on challenges. Why isn't there a system in place when you're 3 years in and you can't make a proper challenge?
Mm-hmm. And we talked about in the pregame show how going through the Vikings coaching staff, they have a game management coach, right? And we talked to Pete, I think his name was. Pete does the Chicago guy make good.
Pete Bursich.
Pete Bursich. And we talked to him, and he said, of course, right? He said, Coach O'Connell, he has so much to do with play calling. He parses out those duties so they can help him during the game, right? And we start to wonder, well, we have a head coach who does play calling. Why isn't there guys who do that for him, right? And why doesn't he have, like who's upstairs telling him to challenge that Addison play, right? Who's helping him with that? And maybe he hasn't surrounded himself with people who are good at what they do, right? We all need guys around us. When you're in a football building, man, you move up to be a head coach because of what you did, and you are elite at your job. Right, you need to find people who are elite at what they do. Game management, right? We talked about how many people have these jobs there in Hallis Hall who are like, you know, stats people, analyst people. There's have like 6 or 7 guys on staff that just do that. They just do that for a living. And who is telling him to challenge that? I don't know, right? So why does Coach Eberflus struggle there? I don't know. Why do him and the special teams coach seem to be not on the same page? I don't know. I can't answer these things for you guys, man. It's been going on too long. When you're, it's like the field goal team, right? Like they're telling you that your field goal team is weak on the left side. You trot out the same guys, right? You didn't see that yourself. LaFleur said they attacked it. They knew they were going to block it. When you do it again, you do it from the right hash, and it gets blocked again, right? I just there's some things you get confused by with how many people they have in that building studying their film, going over things they need to do, right? Instead of forcing the room of media people to say good morning to you, get the field goal team fixed.
This segment with Olin Cruz is sponsored by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. All right, so along those lines, the analytics crowd will tell us that when Matt Eberflus decided to go for two when it was 24-16, that was the right choice because of this and that and whatever, blah, blah, blah. I respect that, even though I just sound like I dismissed that. I respect where they're coming from. But, Olin, you've been in these huddles. You've been on these offenses. From your perspective, and you have now analyzed a lot of games, as you pointed out, what is the right move there, and how do you quantify momentum? And is it indeed lost when you have a touchdown drive and then you don't convert the two-point play, and now you've got to go back to the sideline feeling the loss of that momentum? Does that matter? What do you think about that entire sequence?
Yeah, I go back to everybody in the building, right? When you're watching a team constantly make these mistakes, I go back to the whole team that you built there at Hallis Hall. And without saying names, you know, they have people on staff. They have a guy, director of football analytics, right? They have football administration and analytics coordinator. They also have a football research analyst. They also have a football data engineer, all working up there at Hallis Hall, right? Do we go for it or not on this down? At some point, though, it's got to be what your gut tells you your team needs, right? At some point, you are the head guy. You collect all the information. We make you the head coach. So all these people tell you information, and you pick what's good for your team. And at that moment, like you guys, I'm an old football guy. I thought to myself, take the extra point, right? But I'm sure the math tells you, right? The math tells you to go for two. And then you go for two again. And you know, they have this card now, and they tell you what to do and what not to do and what the percentages are and all these things. But what does my football team do? And if I miss this, right, and you already missed the field goal, if I miss this, what does it do to my football team? So that is the head coach's job. And right now, Coach Eberflus, man, you hate to say poor guy, but right now, no matter what choice he makes, it seems to be the wrong one.
It does.
It's so true.
I mean, and he's going by his gut, right? That doesn't work. He's going by the numbers. Man, that doesn't work, right? It's almost like I think there was a Seinfeld show where George did everything opposite of what he thought and everything started working for him.
maybe that's
great advice.
Maybe
the
Thursday.
Coach.
Maybe that's the Thanksgiving game plan.
They are 10.5 point dogs going into Detroit. You know, Detroit looks like they're going to be the NFC representative in the Super Bowl. They're having that good a year. I just wonder, what were your preliminary thoughts on that game? And there's really, mercifully, as far as I'm concerned, not a lot of time to kind of go through that loss and hear all the postmortems. They got to move forward starting today.
Yeah, it's just going to be very interesting to watch this offense on the road for the first time with Thomas Brown, right? That's what I'm interested in. We know that this offense aligned a lot better at home, protection-wise, and Coleman Shelton doesn't have to do the silent count. And we all know, I played a few games on Thanksgiving up there, how loud it is up there on Thanksgiving. And now, when I played up there and it was loud, they weren't very good. But now they're very good, right? And in the whole city, and I'm sure the state, is very interested in the Detroit Lions. Dan Campbell's got them going. They play a tough style of football, right? We all know the story about they hired Spielman hired Campbell. They have a bunch of former players in that building. They have a bunch of guys who played hard-nosed football. And guys, their team plays that style of ball, right? So our defense, whatever they've been struggling with, running the ball. They got a guy out there, everybody might know him, David Montgomery. Comes downhill at you hard. Panay Sewell up front, Craig Ragnow up front, the Taylor Decker at left tackle, Amon-Ra St. I mean, guys, this offense is going to be a huge challenge for the Chicago Bears. And then a young quarterback, again, want to see him do the special on the road, loud, crowd noise. Can you go up there and win on the road? And the 10.5 dogs, I got to be honest with you, seems about right to me when you match the two teams up. Yep. Put them on film, the way they've been playing, and you talk about the way the Chicago Bears have played on the road and the way they have looked on the road with their protection schemes, and you know why that this game is one we've all, when we looked at the schedule, it's like, oh, man, that's going to be a tough one up there for the Chicago Bears. But, again, like we talked about on the pre- and post-game show, what an opportunity to go out there and prove everybody wrong, because that's what the Bears have left. That's what Coach Eberflus has left. While it seems like he's fighting for his life and fighting for his job, that's what the young quarterback has left as he continues to develop. Is Thomas Brown the guy? Does his offense work on the road? A lot of things to watch come Thursday night.
Oh, and so the Detroit Lions are a good example of a franchise that was floundering and kind of couldn't get out of its own way as well. They had nothing. If they had any luck, it was all bad. And so they changed their direction as a franchise when they made some changes that involved hiring Chris Spielman, former player, hiring Dan Campbell as a coach, former player. As we get ready for, yet again, probably another Bears reboot, is that a relevant example? I know I'm talking to an ex-player who has a lot of thoughts and might be sick of analyzing games after 158 of them, but I wonder, when you look at the future of the Bears, would you envision either suggesting they tap into the ex-player pool for direction, or even get involved and look to see if there's any opportunities for yourself?
Listen, you know, I think everyone has suggested that, right? And I think me and Molly laughed about it. And it sucks that they lose so much that this always comes up. But we laughed about the article you wrote on me way back in the day when I was in the locker room. And I suggested that they had to change some things, and they were broken from top to bottom. And we've been suggesting this, and so have other former players, and so have other guys who've analyzed it. There's a lot of people who have suggested to the Chicago Bears that maybe they take a look at doing things a little differently, right? And then not only that, but when you hire guys, maybe suggest that they take a look at your history and not repeat it over and over and over and over again. So the Lions are a good example. It is a copycat league. They did go out. Now, Chris Spielman, like you guys know, his brother is Rick Spielman.
Right.
Probably leaned on Rick a little bit, right? Rick has a lot of expertise and a lot of, you know, he's done a lot of he's been a general manager for a lot of years in the NFL. But David, eventually up there, they do have to take a look at the way they do things and hiring guys outside the organization to hire people to run the team. We could go through it again, everything they've done, the way they've done things, and then they just keep doing them the same way and they keep getting the same results. So yes, eventually they do have to take a look at it. As you guys know, I'm not going to champion for myself for anything. But it's just if they can look at the Lions and say, man, maybe there's an example of the way we could change the way we do things and maybe try it that way.
Olin, great stuff. Great to see you in the Illinois sweatshirt, too. Congratulations again. Great win for the Illini. Your boys must be delighted. And I'm sure you're planning on being there on Saturday at Wrigley Field.
Enjoy the baseball.
And we'll talk to you
we'll be there at Wrigley Field. And, Coach Bielema doing a great job. And I'm sure you guys, a lot of people have seen, I know it's on Peacock, and a lot of guys, people are watching the Indiana-Ohio State game. But Pat Bryan, the receiver at Illinois, guys, has been an absolute nightmare for people to cover. Luke Altmyer makes a great throw to him. And Pat Bryan, no one's been able to cover him this year. Illinois played a lot of good football, won a lot of games. That was a good, really good football game. You guys know Greg Schiano, right? You guys know Coach Bielema. They were playing really good football. They were matching up. They were head-to-head. Illinois comes out on the right side of a tough, hard-fought football game by two very good football teams and good programs run by good coaches.
Great stuff. We'll talk to you Thursday. Olin will be doing the pregame and the postgame with the Bears at Detroit. So looking forward to that.
Thanks, Olin.
Appreciate it, guys.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, middays 10 till 2.
Tremaine Edmonds, and he said, well, Fred Warner's a special player. I would compare Tremaine's length and athleticism to Fred, his former teammate. That ball bounced off of one of the Bears, the return man, it caromed off his leg.
When you've got one of your players tied up with the gunner who's coming downfield, but there's nobody that's with Trent Sherfield. There's nobody that could potentially have the ball bounce into him except DeAndre Carter when he gets close to it. I mean, that is a call where you come up and you're telling your entire team to get away from the football. You can see there's the gunner right there, Terrell Smith. He bails. He knows it's a poor punt. I don't know why DeAndre Carter put himself in that position.
Nobody seems to know that he's doing the little thing. He's making the right gestures. He's saying the right things. Get out of there.
It's the ultimate action speak louder than words. Because his words are, this is bad. Get out of the way.
Yeah,
get,
but poison, his actions poison, do not poison.
Rules for thee, not for me.
This segment with Anthony Heron is sponsored by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Visit online or their Elmhurst and Lyle showrooms. Well, that was one of the special teams' gaffes. The other was the completely inexcusable blocked field goal. The Packers saw something. They made it clear that they saw something. They clowned the Bears coaches by saying, oh, yeah, we were definitely going to get a block. We just happened to block the one that won the game for us. And then the Vikings do it again. The same damn spot.
Well, and the thing is, it was a slightly different spot because, last week against the Packers, it was Larry Borum getting run over. Now, you got the long snapper, but you got one long snapper. So Scott Daly's going to be in there. But, between Scott Daly, were they on his head too quickly against the Packers, then that's certainly been discussed as well. But Larry Borum gets run over by the Packers. And then yesterday, Braxton Jones gets run over by the Vikings. So for whatever reason, each of them to the interior, and maybe there is something where just that, I'd be curious to hear our guy Patrick Manley talk about it during the week. He probably talked about it a bit on postgame. I didn't get to hear it yesterday. But is there something, some sort of presence that the snapper is expected to be able to provide that's not quite there either? Borum was already out the mix. Then Jones is out the mix after yesterday's block. You don't see field goals get blocked back-to-back weeks on the same team very frequently in the National Football League. Similar distance, the trajectory from Cairo, that ends up mattering, certainly. Jason Hanson, one of my old teammates from the Lions, I remember talking to him back in the day about how most place kickers, and certainly Hanson had a really long and outstanding career, his goal was to make the way he struck every football feel exactly the same up to a certain distance. For him, it was once he got around 40 yards or more. But whether it was an extra point back then, the extra point was a true chip shot, and then they lengthened it by, 20 yards. And so once Jason Hanson got around 40 yards or more, even later in his career, he wanted every time he struck the football on a place kick that wasn't a kickoff to feel exactly the same. So Cairo having a slightly lower trajectory on something mid to upper 40s, that's not a Cairo Santos-specific thing. He's not the only kicker. Like, not everybody is Legatron in the NFL who can drill it from 70 without thinking about it. But Cairo Santos has been extremely accurate for whatever reason. That battery, that process, snap, hold, kick, and protection, it hasn't functioned well over the last couple of weeks. And Richard Hightower has been one of the bright spots in this current iteration of the Bears coaching staff over the last couple of years. The special teams, aside from Velus Jones, had been pretty dependable for the Bears. Their kick cover, their punt cover, their return units when they would actually field the football have had some nice moments. So this, over the last couple of weeks, between the field goals being blocked and then now this DeAndre Carter moment, and, you know, it was nice. I think a lot of us root for guys to have an opportunity to respond and to come back. So he has the nice kick return that puts them in position to get into overtime there. So it's good that he responded, but it just looked too casual.
Mm-hmm.
When he's making the point and the wave, the poison Peter call, trying to get other people away, yeah, you're trying to get Terrell Smith away. He's laying on the ground anyway, but then he shouldn't just be standing there casually in front of the football. I was making notes throughout the game, and the note I made on his previous return right before that was that I termed it as a courageous fielding of the ball on that punt because he caught it on the fly. And the risk you're taking as a punt returner when you're at a full dead sprint to go field that ball is that it's a lot more likely to bounce off your breastplate. You know, like we talk about pass catchers, receivers, tight ends, running backs, some of those guys being body catchers.
Yeah, it's harder to catch it softly that way.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd prefer to extend your hands away from your body, or as a return man, you're really hoping to have sort of a soft cradle of your elbows and your forearms and really kind of getting it into your stomach a bit more as you're fielding a punt. That's the softer area to be able to have the ball not immediately carom off of you like it does when you allow it to get into your pads. So when you're fielding a punt on the fly, you're a lot more likely for the ball to hit you in the pads. So you'll see returners when they're on a dead sprint fielding it on the run. It can look great when it goes well, but when it goes poorly, that ball is going to bounce 20 or 30 yards in the opposite direction. So I thought just before that, he had had a courageous return. He fielded the ball, picked up a few yards, but also likely saved the Bears a bunch of yards by not letting the ball squirt past him by the way he fielded it. And then the very next return, he's just kind of casual doing his poison Peter call, but then the ball hits him in the thigh. So just, you know, for a veteran like that who's in that position on this team specifically for that purpose, it's one of those things you just can't have.
I just trying to figure out the special teams thing. It's odd because we had so many yin yang plays where obviously the block kick, and then as you mentioned, what happened with DeAndre Carter. But then you have an onside kick recovered,
right?
And also Carter does have a decent return, which puts them in position. So what do you think is going through Richard Hightower's head after, well, I don't know if you got to hear the audio last week or see what he had to say about taking all the accountability and that it was on him and it wouldn't happen again. Well, it did happen again. How can they make sure this doesn't happen a third time in a row? Because now at this point, it's a trend, right? The Lions special teams coordinator is licking his lips. Telling these guys, get ready, we're going to have opportunities.
Them. If there's a way to steal points doing that, I mean, you know, it's one thing, like, all right, a 25, 30-yard field goal try, which, you know, nobody wants that to be the effort that's there anyway. If it's a fourth and 10 or less, folks want you to go for every fourth down. But if you got a chip shot field goal, then maybe somebody's going to relax on that. But anything 35, 40 yards and beyond, teams are looking at that saying, yeah, we can block field goals against the Bears. And so until proven otherwise, they're going to get it. Folks are going to bring it against them. That field goal rush is going to be locked in and ready. It's going to be, you know, just, you know, folks are going to just have stuff dripping from their face masks. You're going to hear them snarling and everything. So they've got to be down in their stance, on their haunches, and ready to receive legitimate force. And they're going to overload either side. Whichever hash mark it's on, that opposite side of the field goal rush team is where that overload is going to come from, because you want that additional force, that penetration, to come in the path of the football. So it's the same thing. So that's the biggest similarity about it. We're on one hash one week, the force is coming from that opposing side. Opposite hash the next week, the force is coming from that opposing side. So they're going to see that as the same game plan, the main approach from everybody, until they prove that, yeah, this is a snap you can go ahead and take off because you are not getting through here. But as of right now, folks are getting through, so they're going to keep saying it.
And I want you to take me through the path, because I know there's a path, because there was a path the last 2 weeks.
Right?
Tell me about the path that ends with a Bears win on a short week in Detroit. Stop laughing, Dan. It's a serious question.
So, I mean, you know, it's one thing against Green Bay and Minnesota. They haven't been dominant. They win a lot, and that's a part of the reason they're excellent football teams. Matt LaFleur, proven commodity as a head coach. Dan Campbell, now becoming one of those guys talked about as a proven commodity as a head coach in this league. And Detroit's been dominant. That's the difference. There's only a couple of teams in football that you ever expect to really be dominant. And in this particular season, the Lions are one of those squads. And the way they operate on offense is a part of what puts additional pressure on the opposing offense, because they make life so difficult for your defense. And so if your defense is feeling overwhelmed, is looking like they can't handle what Detroit's offense is throwing at them, now there's more pressure on the Bears' offense to perform at a high level. So I was talking about the different coordinators here with Richard Hightower. You know, he's one of those guys who you've thought of a lot of the time here in Chicago. If this coaching staff isn't going to make it, man, it'd be, you know, it's too bad because Richard Hightower is a really good coordinator. Can Thomas Brown continue to mount additional sort of data points to show that he's one of these guys that if it's not here in Chicago, is going to end up elsewhere and be a really well-respected commodity as a coordinator? You've seen back-to-back games of that. It's only two games, but two different formulas to do that. And it's impressive because not only did his quarterback look more comfy, the comfy QB was back, but his offensive line held up. Yeah, there was three sacks in the game, but there's a lot of clean pockets against that Vikings blitz package, against that Vikings pass rush. The variety of eye candy that Thomas Brown continues to throw at the opposing defense has had Caleb Williams and his offensive line in a position to succeed and to have less, he used the term stress. And I think that's a great term to use for it because offensive coordinators, the best ones really do an effective job of calling the game through the lens of how do I make my offensive line comfortable? How do I keep duress off my quarterback? And so for Detroit, if the Bears defense can at least, you know, hold them at bay a bit, the Bears offense to be able to take the air out of the football, win the time of possession game. And when you get to that red zone, can't settle for field goals against the Lions. You got to put touchdowns on the board.
The reason why I don't have the Bears winning this week is very simple. I watched that Texans game from start to finish. And if a man could turn the ball over five times through the air and still win the game,
That is a complete football team that is on a mission right now. And just season over season, Detroit 2 years ago as they closed out that season felt like maybe they were building towards something. And then last season with that same cast of characters in place, you know, you can tell, all right, that this is a team that is now emerging and they have not missed a beat this season. And the way I talked about Caleb is where Jared Goff has been during this stretch of his time in Detroit with the Lions, a guy whose force of will seems to be part of what feeds that team. Now, yes, Dan Campbell's leadership and the urgency that he pushes and drives his team with, they all feed off of that. So having that leadership at the top matters. But between the white lines, you can only count on the coaches to do so much. And Jared Goff has gotten to a space in his career where his competitive temperament is a big part of what Detroit feeds off of. And he shows no flinch in so many key and critical moments, even after his own errors. And that's what I found to be really cool about Caleb yesterday, where just something about even his pace of play, not that he was rushing or hurrying to the line of scrimmage, but there was this constant urgency and energy. And he seemed even more outward with his celebration of things. And, you know, it wasn't oversized, but it felt like he wanted everyone on board with him. The Bears were feeding off of that in a variety of phases. So I thought that was just a really cool moment that ended in a defeat. But there was a lot from last week to this week. We're seeing a guy growing, and I just really hope they continue a formula that allows Caleb's growth to continue.
Then give him more. Give whatever power he has, whatever autonomy he has.
Whatever he says he needs, right?
Whatever he says he needs or wants.
Or just keep doing exactly what you're doing. Like, you know, good football is fine. It doesn't have to immediately be more. He's a few games into his rookie season. I'm cool with whatever they're doing right now. I don't need more on Caleb. Now, yesterday was more on him, though. The run-pass ratio was not in my comfort zone, but they couldn't run the football, and it was a lot of extended handoffs within the offense from Thomas Brown to Caleb. So that game plan suited yesterday against the best defense in football. So, you know, is it 50 passes or something from Caleb? I hope not, but I'm not going to put it past him. Two games with Thomas Brown, this thing is cooking pretty well. I'm liking it.
Anthony Heron, thanks so much. Hope you have a lovely Thanksgiving.
Appreciate you, fellas.
We are so happy that you are hanging out on the Spiegel at Home show. Matt Spiegel is back. He's got a list of things and grievances with the Bears and how they play. Lance Briggs is going to join us at 3 o'clock. He's got a list of things that he would like to talk about as well.
Yeah, I mean, and there was plenty of stuff to be happy about from that offensive performance and overall in terms of thinking about the quarterback is just a remarkable thing. But they have failed once again to have things ready for a really, really good young quarterback. I don't think we've seen one this good And so that overall leads to some very, very thoughtful and logical positivity on the big picture. But the short picture is ugly. That's for damn sure. I thought this stuff that you and Layla had with Jalen Johnson yesterday was just remarkable. I mean, he was very down.
He was great. I told Shane I thought he did a great piece of producing yesterday where we had spent 12, 13 minutes of us talking with Jalen about all the horrible, and we got back on track talking with him about cooking. But he's the thing about Jalen, he's very honest, and he is very honest that how this isn't supposed to look the way that it looks.
When you consider the talent level that you all have, knowing the professionals in the room, knowing the amount of veterans on this team, how do you take that into account? Because I know you guys know that you're better than this.
I mean, I feel like that's what drives the frustration the most. But I mean, I would say in 2022, we had a terrible roster. So, I mean, we didn't just have a whole bunch of guys that had made a name for themselves, that proved themselves. I mean, honestly, that was probably the time where it's like, okay, we're not really built to win right now. But I feel like the team that we have, roster that we have right now, we're built to win right now. And I don't think it's something where it's, okay, we got to come in and get the right guys in the building. I mean, for the most part, as far as the locker room goes, we have the right guys. And we have enough to be able to win right now and to be a playoff team. Again, we just haven't put it all together top to bottom. As far as being able to execute, be put in the right positions, just really all of it. I feel like we all got to do a better job.
And it's interesting, too, because you said at the beginning of the year, at the end of preseason, and it stuck with me, where you're like, look, there have been times that I've been on teams and the teams were supposed to take a step forward and they didn't take a step forward. So yeah. I imagine that there is a lot of hurt that goes along with that, where you're stuck in this cycle of it not going the way that any of you guys want, and maybe feeling like you're doing everything you can, but even that hasn't been good enough, that could be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't think the losses that we have is from a lack of effort or guys not going 100%. I mean, I feel like that's probably the biggest thing, is going out there each and every day, each and every game, putting your body on the line, trying to prepare the right way, and honestly just coming up short. So, I mean, I don't think anybody tries to lose the game. But, again, just for us trying to put it all out there and coming up short for whatever reason it is, definitely hurts.
Thought it was jarring to hear Jalen as down as he was yesterday. And it speaks to what I think is the biggest problem. But, like, because there are a lot of factors as to why this is a defense in decay. Lawrence, some people have texted in, whether it's missing Big Bill, missing Andrew Billings, whether it's injuries to other players like Jaquan Brisker. Not getting consistent pressure. And there's news on that front from some stuff that Eric Washington had to say today that we will get to a little bit later. So there's all sorts of reasons. But to me overall, and I think it's exemplified by the way that Jalen was talking, and I think it's exemplified by what we've seen in multiple games, there is a loss of confidence and edge and belief in that unit. And I have often and always thought that NFL defense has to have that belief and swagger and group confidence to really perform in this league, because everybody's so damn good, man. And whether we've seen so many teams talk about it, when it's not there, we know what it looks like. I feel like that's what we are seeing now, is just a little bit of like, oh man, expectation of things going to go poorly, and the loss of togetherness. When you asked Jalen about the run game, he said, yeah, we're just not getting in our spots, you know, not filling the gaps right. Like, people are not doing the right thing as quickly and confidently as they have, because they have lost that swagger.
We
man.
Say it a lot when it comes to this defense, but it's a one-gap defense, okay? So everyone has a gap they're responsible for. Sometimes guys freelance, even though they shouldn't, and they get out of their gap. And then it's like a house of cards. It collapses. You get out of your gap, and I go, bleep, Spees is out of his gap. Someone's mm-hmm. got to cover his gap. I go cover your gap. Alex is like, Lawrence is out of his gap.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's got to cover that gap.
he gets out of his gap.
And then Tyler Farringall's doing what he's got to do, covering Alex's gap.
And then all of a sudden there's a cutback lane for someone, and right. they go 30 yards.
And then all of a sudden Aaron Jones is getting 15 on a carry.
Right.
And 15 again. And then 30.
It's a scary. What if I offered to you that if I say you're right, and then I go back to a specific moment,
okay.
What if they had an overload of that swagger in Washington? The defense had an overload of that swagger when Tyreek Stevenson is back there talking with fans.
Sure, sure.
And then everyone's like, oh, we need to be a lot more considerate of what we're doing here.
Absolutely. And because once that disaster happens, as we've talked about for weeks now, the after effects of what happened there, where they were shattered by that, embarrassed by that, and the leadership was dog crap. The leadership from your head coach, your leader of men, he refused to be accountable. He didn't get on Tyreek publicly and talk about that. Like, they didn't communicate the right way. A whole bunch of players stepped up and said some stuff. You could argue they talked too much, but then nobody said anything publicly to refute that, just to try to clamp it back down. Like, it was chaos that week where it's so clear they weren't holding it together. And then the effort that you saw in Arizona, man.
As bad as Washington was,
That's 50, worse.
53-yard touchdown with 4 seconds left on a give-up play.
Everything that happened there. And then the New England game right after that.
Yeah.
That team broke, and that defense broke. They got it up for the Packers game, you know, because it was the Packers game, and you had all the veterans in town.
And then you had your heart broken.
You had your heart broken again. They're broken, man. That defense is broken.
You know what? It's a good thing that we're going to talk to Lance Briggs in the next segment. And I just texted him, was like, I want to talk to you about gap integrity, because I don't know if anyone can explain like the one gap defense thing better than him and what happens. So we're going to talk with him about all sorts of stuff, but that part of it too. Don't go anywhere. Lance Briggs is next. Spiegel and Holmes on The Score.
Dan, good morning. How you doing?
Day 45 since the Bears' last victory. I'm cheerful, getting ready for a Thanksgiving trip to Detroit.
Did you think when you came out of London that not until you get to Detroit would they finally break the losing streak?
I mean, we're talking about maybe not until 2025 that they break the losing streak. I mean, like, think about that. And if you had posed that on the flight back from London, I wouldn't have known what to think.
Seems like a different team. It seems like a different time and season. And now everything seems to be headed toward another overhaul, another change, and a lot of things. But you do have the Caleb Williams progress to, I guess, celebrate or pay attention to.
For Dan, sure.
How significant is that, and how dramatic of – I don't say dramatic, but how did you define Sunday?
Well, it's the most significant thing we have to monitor here down the stretch of this season. And David, the one thing that I loved most about Sunday's performance against the Vikings is the fearlessness that Caleb played for. And it echoed the sentiments that Thomas Brown expressed last week heading into the game, that he didn't want Caleb fearful of mistakes. He didn't want Caleb fearful of taking chances. And so you get that message through to your quarterback. You allow him to use his talents, the ability to use his vision to find quick answers when the Vikings heated you up. That performance was really, really impressive with all of the factors included. And then you get another instance where you need your quarterback to come kind of rescue you in the fourth quarter of a football game. And he shows he's up to that challenge. Again, for the third time in the 5-game losing streak, he led a drive and two, really, with the field goal drive to end it in the fourth quarter. That tells you that he's got that big moment moxie that you need to reach the highest levels in this league. And so you just need to see continued evidence of that down the stretch of this season.
What changes, what shifts now that the coordinator is putting a game plan together on the road? Now you're trying to figure out what you can do on the road. The Bears offensive line has been better at home than on the road. I'm not predicting that they'll fall apart. I'm just curious, do you have to take that into consideration when you're going from from a couple games at Soldier Field to a game in Detroit on national TV on AstroTurf.
There's no doubt, and you've got to be cleaner pre-snap than the Bears have been at times on the road this year. You got to make sure that you're not putting yourself behind the chains with cadence issues and false starts and, you know, illegal motions and things that'll set you back. What was interesting, Molly, yesterday was, you know, I started the press conference to Caleb beginning a question about how he was going to kind of streamline his routine for the week, being that this is the first time that he's had a Thursday game in his career. And he cut me off quickly and said, yeah, this is different for me. You know, like I'm learning on the fly here. This is a first in terms of kind of understanding one, how to get yourself physically and mentally regrouped from the previous week, but then also putting in the time and understanding you can't check every single box when you've only got, you know, 3 days of preparation, no time on the practice field, a couple walkthroughs, abbreviated meetings, a trip, you know, on Wednesday on an airplane. So you've got to find an answer. The good news or the bad news for Caleb is they're going to have another short week next month when they have the Seahawks here the day after Christmas. And so you've got to learn things as you go through this process about what it takes in all different weeks to succeed. And this is going to be a very unique challenge for Caleb on a short week against a team right now that's steamrolling everybody.
Dan, let's talk about something on defense. I don't know the answer to. Maybe you do. Montez Sweat, he did have a sack. He did make some progress, and PFF graded him highly. All those things are good. When he lines up on the left side time and again, now this challenge against Penei Sewell is different than it is against a lot of teams. Why doesn't he move around more than maybe the Bears have moved him around? Is that a personal preference? Is that something that you've talked about with anybody on the defensive staff? Does that even make any sense?
It's a good question. It's probably worth exploring further today as the Bears go to Detroit to play a football team that may be without its starting left tackle. You know Taylor Decker, yeah. I'm not sure what his official status is yet, but I know there's some concern that he's going to be available tomorrow. And so you got Dan Skipper starting at left tackle for the Lions. And if you want to find a way to find a matchup that favors you, that might be a way to do it. In the spring and summer, David, they talked a lot about how they were going to get creative with Montez Sweat and find different ways to use him to create matchups for both him and other guys up front. And they haven't been able to do so consistently enough. It's one of the reasons they're 4-7. There's a long, 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 long list of reasons that they're 4-7. That's certainly part of the inventory.
You know, we talked about this idea. You know, their defense we had talked about as one capable of being in the top 10. Maybe it's a top 5 defense.
Yeah.
We thought the strength of the defense was the secondary. Talking about going into the year a long time ago. Then you have this game against the Vikings where whenever you had any adversity, you can block a field goal. That doesn't mean they have to come down and score a touchdown.
Right.
You know, you can fail a 2-point conversion. That doesn't mean they have to come down and kick a field goal. It just felt like, and then you get into overtime, and first and 17, first and 20. It didn't. Distance didn't matter, which is a weird thing to say when you thought their defense was good. And meanwhile, their secondary is playing terribly. And I know that Brisker's out, and I know that Billings is out, and that is impacting them, but they don't have to give up that many explosives. And Tyreek Stevenson missing in action. What happened to him? I think Kyler Gordon's playing great. I think Jalen Johnson's a great player. I don't know if he's playing great. He's down. He certainly sounded down earlier in the week. What's going wrong with the defense / secondary?
Molly, nothing bothered me more on Monday than rewatching the overtime. And when you had the opportunity to put your defense back on the field, even after the offense went 3-and-out, you had won the coin flip, you had a chance to get the football back and win the game. And on the first play, you get a Montez Sweat splash play, and it's 2nd-and-17, and you let him out of that hole. And then they never face third down again after they convert a 3rd-and-10 to Jordan Addison, where, oh, by the way, he had like 13 yards of cushion on 3rd-and-10, got a free access route, caught the football, got the first down without any challenge. And then they were behind the sticks again with a false start penalty, behind the sticks again with a holding penalty, and got out of it 3 times on that overtime drive. And when this defense talked about itself all through the spring and summer as a top 5 unit, you expected them to keep the takeaway total high. You expected them to have consistent pressure on the quarterback, and you expected them more than anything to be able to close football games. Blew an opportunity in Washington, well documented on how that got astray. Blew an opportunity against the Packers a week and a half ago. Blew an opportunity in overtime to get the football back for their offense. That's not a top five defense. That's probably not a top 15 defense when you're not able to rise up and meet those moments. I don't know where they go from there, because they've certainly got enough talent on that unit, even with the attrition, even with Brisker and Billings out, to play better than they have. And now, by the way, you go to Detroit to play a backfield duo that has a chance to really embarrass you on a national stage on Thursday afternoon.
So, Dan, our resident provocateur, Patrick Manley, suggested yesterday that about Jalen Johnson, he was a broken bear and suggested maybe his friendship with Roquan Smith might lead him down a path where he might one day want to be an ex-Bear and go to greener pastures and go somewhere where he can win a Super Bowl instead of get beaten down by all the losing. What did you think of that? And could any of this be trending in that direction based on what you heard from Jalen Johnson on Monday?
Well, you guys know Manley always spitting out hot takes just to create controversy, right? That's the reputation of Patrick, right? I don't know, David. You know, this is a dispiriting skid for everybody. Jalen Johnson just signed a long-term contract extension this spring, and I think it's probably a little premature to worry about his imminent exit from Hallis Hall. What I would say is that the frustration is real, and I think of guys like him and Cole Kmet, who joined this organization in 2020, and this will be the end of their fifth season. And in four of those five seasons, they'll get to the end of their season with the Bears either firing their coach or considering firing their coach. The season that they didn't, they lost 14 games and finished the year on a 10-game losing streak under a new regime. So you can understand the buildup of dejection and despondency that guys like that feel. This is deja vu for everyone that's been part of this. You guys feel it. We feel it. Imagine how much more intensely they feel it inside that locker room, particularly when you're a guy like Jalen Johnson or Cole Kmet, who's lived this in so many different variations over a five-year span. At some point, the Bears have to find a formula to make these guys happy, and those guys have to be part of the formula to create the winning culture that they so often talk about that never leads to results on game days.
So, I don't want to single out anybody or talk about somebody. I got to tell you, for whatever reason, it just annoyed the hell out of me that Richard Hightower had a moment in that news conference where he got a little puffy chested and talked about the onside kick working, and they had worked on it for 2 hours twice a week for 2.5 years. I mean, why not work on the block punt, a block field goal? Why not work on fielding a bloody punt or getting, you know, respecting the 7-yard distance if the ball's going to bounce? You may feel like you deserve congratulations on that, but again, that is a play where the oblong ball bounces and it hits a guy in the leg. I can't get too worked up about that. And the idea that you're supposed to stop and say, wow, you know, never mind the other two bungled plays. That was really, you know,
right.
Never mind the 10 points that it cost you, which you would have won without. Let's talk about that onside kick.
Yeah, right. This is like a basketball team practicing full court baseball shots at the end of every practice, you know, and then hitting one at the end of a third quarter and being like, man, that was amazing that finally came to life. You know, there's too many other plays over this 5-game losing streak that have gone wrong for your special teams unit. And so to kind of, you know, there's a little bit of desperation inside those walls right now,
sure,
Mully. And some of it is just like you're trying to slow the avalanche that has come at you over the last 45 days. And part of the way you do that is just try to deflect from the main topics and find things that you can cling to. But there's been too many instances, you know, like I go back to Matt in the post game after the Commanders loss, standing at that podium. And if you watch those 10 minutes after they lost one of the most heartbreaking games in recent Bears history, and him saying, there's a lot of good to take out of this. Like, it's tone deaf. It doesn't match with the mood. It doesn't match with the results. It doesn't match with the need to make sure that your units are playing their best when they need to be playing their best. And so I think that's where some of the outside frustration really amplifies. guys, and then it creates an amplified defense system inside Hallis Hall of people trying to say, oh, but wait, we do some good things. Well, not good enough. Your last place football team, four games out of third place in your own division. And I think Bigsy put it in his 10 Thoughts column on Monday that they're closer to having the number one pick than they are to being in third place in the NFC North. Chew on that and put that as your appetizer dish for Thanksgiving.
Well, enjoy your Thanksgiving in Detroit, Dan. Have a safe trip, and thanks for all you do.
Did you pick the game, Dan? Do you have a pick?
I have not filed the official prediction yet, but it's going to be Lions and a Lions cover because there's just no other reason to go against it. Marley, I think they've averaged 4 offensive touchdowns per game this season, and they're outscoring their opponents by an average of 19 points in this 9-game winning streak. Good luck slowing down that train.
All right, buddy. Have a great one. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. See ya.
Happy Thanksgiving, fellas. Talk to you soon.
That is Dan Weed.
Now it is time for us to talk to our guy. TJ Edwards joins us on the Score Hotline that is presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com. He is on Twitter at TJ Edwards 8, and the Bears linebacker joins us on twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score. Hey, TJ, what's happening, man?
What's going on, guys?
Well, you tell us, what's the mood?
Not much. We just got done with walkthrough and things like that. The good and bad part about Thursday games, it's a quick turnaround, but honestly, I think it might be good for us right now. Just get back to our routine and understand what we got coming Thursday. So we're excited to get down there and put on a good show.
So then if you just got through walkthrough, that means today's considered Friday for you?
Yeah. That's pretty good. I mean, coach is trying to take care of our legs a little bit, hard fought game and things like that. So give us a little time to recover and make sure we have, our best as we can be ready to go for Thursday.
What was to be learned from this latest disappointing loss that amazingly at the end felt like it could have been a win, but it was just enough to tantalize us?
Yeah, I think the offense did a great job, just moving the ball, getting points and things like that. I think I can really only speak defensively. I think just kind of, giving up some big plays in crucial moments, and that's on all of us, right? That's everybody, and just got to execute better a little down the stretch. And I think we saw that kind of, I feel like for these past couple of games, we're just, not playing to our standard, and we know that. And we got to find a way to get that done, and no better way to do that on Thanksgiving in prime time on Thursday.
We were talking to Jalen Johnson yesterday about the challenges that this Lions offense brings. You see the scoreboard numbers, those speak for themselves when they're putting up 50, 60 points in a single game. How do you describe their offense and the approach in trying to stop it? Because I feel like it's a 7-headed monster.
Yeah. They have a lot of great players over there. They've been playing together for a while now. So the chemistry, I feel like, is really good, same coordinator for them. So they're definitely all on the same page. But for me, it kind of goes through their run game. It's what they pride themselves on what they do well. And it shows up all over the tape. They got two great backs, quarterback who makes everything go, and a bunch of explosive people outside with a really good O-line too. So, it's going to be a great challenge, but I think it's one we're excited for. We know them pretty well. They know us. And so it's just going to be about winning your matchups. And that's the exciting part, because I know we got guys to do it.
I was a little surprised in the last game that with the Vikings getting the ball in OT and only needing a field goal, that the defense wasn't positioned a little more aggressively, and it seemed like it allowed them to get it over the first layer of the defense in a way where it's, you catch it at 8 yards and you fall forward for another 3, and it's like, it just shouldn't be that easy. How much autonomy do you guys have to play up a little further? Are you on your very specific landmark?
It varies on the call, right? Sometimes you're on your landmark and you're playing with vision to kind of break on the ball and things like that. And then other times you're matching a man where you're a bit tighter. And I know we try to, do a good job of mixing and matching those, just depending on the situation. And a lot of that is rushing cover and covering rush. So it's kind of, giving our D-line a tick of time to get there and them, winning. So I think it's a combination of both. And I know Foose tries to, mix that up depending on kind of where we're at in the field, situationally and things like that. And again, I think kind of towards the end of that game, this past game, you know, it came to a point where we had to execute better. You know, kind of got beat on some things, and that's how it goes. You know, normally it comes down to five or six plays in these type games, and you know, we were on the other side of those.
I know you talked about your run fits, and I know you're stressing that against the Lions. How did you see that play out in the game against the Vikings?
Yeah, I feel like we started off a little rocky, to be honest with you. Obviously, they hit that big one with Aaron Jones. And, you know, I think they had a couple throughout the game after that that maybe went for 9 or 10. But so I think for the most part, you know, I think besides early on, it was decent. It was better, but it's still not to our standard at all, right? Like we that's kind of what we preach on. That's what, you know, to play on our terms, we have to stop the run and get teams backed up in the sticks. And it's going to be no different this week. And there's going to, you know, be, you know, some different things that Detroit does than other teams. But at the end of the day, you know, it's one man, one gap. And we got to find a way to stop that thing so that we can do what we do on third down.
I remember the last time Coach Eberflus talked about point of attack tackling. I feel like it was fixed the next week and then for the rest of the season. I know there were a couple of missed tackles against the Vikings or situations where maybe people didn't take an angle that made sense necessarily, or, you know, you do what you can, but it's just not, it doesn't end up as the right angle. How much has tackling been stressed either in film or in practice so far, what you have had of it this week?
Yeah. I mean, tackling is something that we start every week with. That is something that we talk about. We talk about the cup. So we talk about, you know, having good leverage on people, having, you know, two guys outside and one person over the top so that we can kind of, you know, stop all those hidden yards. So it's not going for not getting hit at for 3 yards and then going for five or six. So it's something that we stress every single week, and that hasn't changed no matter if it was a good week or a bad week tackling. But it's, you know, it's the NFL, and you know, they got explosive players over there too, and sometimes those things happen, but it can't be something that you know, shows up every single week. So, you know, I think, again, kind of from a whole defensive standpoint, we just needed to be cleaner from fundamentals to coverages to run fits. And good teams like, you know, the Vikings, they'll expose you if you don't.
When you said it would kind of be good for this team to have a little change in routine, a little shock to the system, to have this other game coming up on you so quickly, why? How could that be good for you?
I think, you know, it's easy to, you know, some of these close games that we've been in, like we feel just like everyone else feels, like we're hurt from those losses. We put so much into it and then not get the outcome. It's tough to, sometimes just to, you know, let that go. But it's something that drives us just because we want to get over that hump more than anything. And I think with it being a Thursday, you kind of, you know, you have to speed up your clock. You know, you have to get on the next opponent's film. You have to kind of get ready for what's coming. And not that you never forget what happens, but you learn from it quicker, and you know that these things can't wait to be corrected till Thursday. You know, we got to correct them now. So I think from that aspect, it helps a little bit.
What do you think about, I know playing in a Thursday game is nothing different, but what do you think about playing on Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, normally it's a, you know, you're playing on Thursday, you're playing at night, right? But I think to be playing at 12:30 is a little different. But I think it's nice too, because you kind of just get to wake up and go get it. You know, Thanksgiving is exciting, right? It's prime time game, and you know, I've never played on Thanksgiving before, so I'm excited about that. But it'll be good. You know, I think we want to go home and have a good meal and enjoy that meal because we came out with a win for sure.
When you look at, and I know this isn't something that players often look at, but that 10.5-point line tells a story of expectations. And do you think it's important internally, or at least to show your peers around the league, that this Bears team has not become a double-digit underdog doormat at this point? How important is just the quality of your play on the road against the best team in the league to show that you guys maybe should have won some of these games? You are better than your record says you are.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, I have no idea what that is or any of that. Like, I just know that we can beat anybody if we're playing our best, if we're playing all together. Complimentary football. I truly believe that there's not a team that we can't beat. And I think we go into every game and we show that. But we're just not finishing the way that we need to win those big time games that teams, you know, do. So there's no better way to do that than this week when, you know, to everyone else, the sky's falling. You know, everyone's, you know, honest right now. And I get it. That's football. But I think for us, we're just excited for another opportunity to go show the world.
TJ, thank you. And have a happy, healthy Thanksgiving. I hope it's a successful one on the field and an enjoyable one thereafter.
Absolutely. Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys as well.
Let's take a look at that Chicago defense.
Lance Briggs, Desert Swarm, Arizona.
Lance Briggs.
Bears bring four, now fifth, and it's Lance Briggs!
For him to come here and secure his name in the history of the Chicago Bears as being one of the greatest to ever wear the 55 jersey.
Chicago Bears linebacker for 12 seasons.
Right into the hands of Briggs, and Briggs is going! And Lance Briggs with a second defensive score tonight for Chicago!
Seven-time Pro Bowl selection.
Lance Briggs tumbles into the end zone! Touchdown!
A monster now. Mm-hmm. You turn his film on. You want to watch a guy. You enjoy watching play football. Turn Lance Briggs' film on, man. He is a maniac out there.
Three-time All-Pro.
Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher. Those two guys quite likely will be visiting each other in the Hall of Fame.
I played alongside this piece for 10 years. He made me a better player because if I didn't play well, he'd make all the plays and I'd just be a guy out there.
Football analyst for CHGO.
If you want to leave men, you got to be willing to fight every one of them in the room. Football is a control fight, but you have to be able to challenge them.
Lance Briggs with Spiegel and Holmes.
El Boogie dances in.
On 670 The Score.
Lance Briggs joins us every Tuesday at 3 o'clock to break down what's going on with the Bears. It is Spiegel and Holmes. We are here with you. And so is El Boogie. He's on Twitch. If you would like to be on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Boogie, thanks so much for joining us, man. I know that it has been rough during this 5-game losing streak to stay positive and stay on the grind, but we're happy that you're here. One, because, you know, we just like you, but two, you're the perfect guy to answer this or explain this to us that did not play football. You played in this defense. You played in this one gap defense. For the Bears fan that's watching some of the big run plays that the Bears have given up, can you walk us through how important and why gap integrity is so important in this defense?
Well, when you get into a run-stopping defense, and which meaning you have eight in the box, that means that every gap should be accounted for if the offense runs a play, you know. And we'll take an example. This past week, there was a two tight end set, one tight end on one side, one tight end on the other. You have two linebackers for one back. So if they run a play to the left, let's say they run a play to the left without pulling anybody, the linebackers run down into their gaps. All the defensive linemen are in a gap. You have one of the D linemen that's in probably the play side B gap. One's in the backside A gap. One's in both defensive ends are in the C gaps. Your linebackers are going to be in one of the open A or B gaps, and your safety is going to be in the D gap to the play side. That means that every gap is accounted for, but you have to fight to maintain that gap because the offense is going to do the best they can to get you out of it, to get you off of your mark, to get you on skates, to push you past your gap, or they're going to double you. They'll double you and work up to the second level to get to the linebacker, but they're going to help. They'll help each other. And while they're helping each other, if you don't fight as soon as that lineman gets off of that double team, you don't fight to get to that ball. That's exactly what the offense wants. So gap integrity is more than just being in the gap. It is an absolute control fight to not only maintain that gap, but to be a playmaker once you can locate the football.
So they will physically try to move you off of that gap to create openings that the running back can then see and then run through. Are there reasons that a defensive player might not be in that gap just on their own? Like, what are some of the reasons that a defensive player might make the wrong choice or lose focus and lose gap integrity all on his own? Why does it happen?
His eyes are wrong. his keys, you know, where his keys are supposed to be initially, you know, you'll get a what we call an influence trap, you know, where a guard will pull behind the center, and the tackle will be coming to trap you from the backside. You're just looking at the influence. You could have a yo or a Y off, you know, and he go from one side. We call it a flash. You go from one side all the way to the other side. And if you're looking at him, he'll take you right out of your gap instead of looking at your key, which is supposed to be your near back, which is the back in the backfield. There's a lot of different ways to manipulate the linebacker keys or to get you out of your gap. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's the white block where the center pulls behind the guard. It's really quick. If you don't catch it, they'll have you out. They'll have you outnumbered to the play side. So there's a ton of ways that offense is going to try to distract you from what your key is, and your key is going to take you to where your gap's going to be.
Hey, Lance, I feel like I'm watching a defense that is dispirited. You know, that feels a little beaten, or a little, they certainly have lost that unified confidence that the best units can play with. Can that contribute to some of what we're seeing if they feel like, you know, bad things are going to happen, or they feel like they're not as confident as they have been as a group in the past?
Well, you should always be confident, you know, when bad things happen, you have to really look at yourself in the mirror and say, okay, how did we allow this to happen? How do we allow this crap to creep in? So, you know, it all starts with fundamentals. If fundamentally you're sound in a one gap system, then how can you lose? You know, the motto is supposed to be, when we're in an 8-man front, you cannot run. Like, you cannot run on us, you know? And so if they are running, it starts with accountability and everybody asking who the hell wasn't in their gap. Okay. Now, when you get to practice, and we go through that tape and we say, okay, this is what happened. This is what happened. This is what happened. Okay. You know, hey, Lance wasn't in his gap. He wasn't where he was supposed to be on play 13, on play 17, and on play 19. All right. And these are the reasons why. Okay. You know, I had a bad step. I had a red, bad key. I didn't attack my gap the way I should have. There's a lot of reasons why. I had a defensive tackle that was knocked into my gap. So we had two guys in one gap. You ever see two guys in one gap? And versus the run, we're in trouble. We're going to be in trouble.
I can hear the frustration in your voice. I always loved this, like, with working with Lance, like, getting Lance on the board or getting him to kind of break stuff down is, like, my favorite thing. But I can also hear, like, your emotion that you're upset. Why are you upset with how the Bears have played defensively?
Well, the run is disappointing. The run more than anything else, because – you can get a guy off the street to get into a gap, you know? And so, it was disappointing for me to see, you know, the Vikings in a two tight end set, you know, a deuce set with tight ends on both sides, and us not be able to set edges and then be able to run the ball outside the tackles. You know, it's been a trend that's been happening with the Bears, you know, for over probably the better half of 2 months now. They haven't done well at stopping the run, and it shows. And teams know that. Teams are going to continue to pick at them that way. Defeating the run should be second nature. We should be able to stop the run and force them to be a one-dimensional team, and we're not doing that.
It's really compelling and really sad to watch this defense kind of fall apart the way that they have. You've got the defense, like, regressing, Lance. And I mean, that's Matt Eberflus's calling card, right? So, like, how can anybody sit here and say there's a chance that this guy's not a dead man walking when, like, the defense, they're supposed to be busting their ass and staying unified. He's the defensive play caller, and this is the culture that it's built on. I feel like we're just waiting for the inevitable at the end of the year, Lance.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm a true believer that nothing is completely out of control. Now, the one thing that you can't control, you can control the next play. So everything starts with one play. Go out on the very first play of this next game and win that down. All right. You win that down, then we move on to the next. You know, a lot of times when you're getting blown out by a team, what an offense will do, you know, is they'll say, okay, let's just put together one drive where we drive down the field. We're not going to sit up here and throw every down. We're going to use our offense. It's going to be balanced, taking what they give us. Let's go down and let's score one touchdown, because we need to be capable of doing that. So it starts with one play. If you're capable of going out on one play and stopping your opponent, then you're capable of doing it again, and you're capable of doing it again until it's consistent throughout that game. So let's start there and not worry about who's going to be at the helm, who's going to be our head coach or whoever, whatever, to let that stuff land where it may. But let's build your resume as a football player in the NFL that says, listen, I will fight to the very end. So if it's with the Bears or it's with somebody else, this is what I want to put on tape.
Lance Briggs joining us here on Spiegel and Holmes. Boogie, how do you feel about the offense over the last couple of weeks?
We're trending in the right direction, you know, and that's a good thing. And look, you know, the effect of Thomas Brown up to this point, I do like it. I like it. It's too early to say, you know, he's the end all be all, you know, and all that stuff. But I'll tell you what, in the 2 weeks that he has taken over, I have seen progress. Now I want to continue to see that through the rest of the year, you know, to solidify how I want to think about him. You know, I think especially in Chicago, you know, we're craving a winner so bad that at the flash of something, we're like, we got one, we got one. You know, we need patience. We need patience, and with patience, it will all unfold. It'll all play out.
Lance, every time we hear Olin Krude say in that open, you want to talk about film. You want to watch a guy's career jump out on film. And he's talking about you. And I think of you as one of like the bigger, thicker, torsoed, stronger linebackers that I can remember in Bears history. 6'1", 240.
You're saying girthier.
What's that?
Are you saying girthier?
Yeah. But it, not in a one extra breakfast burrito kind of way. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that in like, just able to still be, you know, agile while also being that thick in the torso. 6'1", 244, says Wikipedia. Is that correct, sir?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
I mean, shoot, I think Wikipedia has been wrong about me in a lot of ways, but when I play, that's about it.
I won't go down the other things that are there. We'll just stay on this one for now. But yeah, because right. I'm looking at Zach Orr last night as a defensive coordinator of the Ravens, and I'm like, oh, look at that dude. That's a linebacker torso. That is not. And I knew, like, I looked up his career and I'm like, yep, linebacker. Are you still barrel chested and thick in that way? Like, that doesn't change even a decade after your career, does it?
I'm sure it changes for a lot of guys. You know, I have Briggs DNA, you know, from my mom. If you've seen my mom and my aunts, you know, and my family, you'll know that listen, we got thick thighs. We got thick thighs and big booties. You know what I mean? We're thick. We're thick where the linebackers need to be thick. That's the way we're built, you know? And I think eventually, you know, some of that stuff will shave off, whatever it is. But, mm-hmm. you know, we maintain better than some of these other guys.
So was your mom and your aunt, were they better at the mic or the will in these defenses, Lance?
Well, I mean, my mom was a tennis player, you know? So, you know, she had good lateral movement, you know? Linebackers have good lateral movement, you know? And so, I think
the sisters were softball, right?
Sisters were volleyball players. They play softball too. They play softball, basketball, volleyball. You know, so it's there's some athletic genes in there. But one thing that doesn't leave, we got thick thighs and big booties.
So Lance, if going into a Thursday game, short week after a rough loss, what would be your advice to the Bears to get ready for this Lions team?
Work on the things that got you there. You know, it's going to be a short week. You're not going to do anything, any kind of full contact hitting. But what you can do is you can work on the plays that hurt you last week. You can build on that because what hurt you last week hurt you the week before, and they continue to do it, and it's just the run. The run should be the simplest thing for us to stop. That's the simplest thing. Start there. Start with a walkthrough where everybody gets their fits. Everybody's where they're supposed to be. Don't end any practices, any drills where somebody wasn't where they're supposed to be. You know, everything needs to be 100% in practice so that when you get to the game, it should transfer over.
How do you feel about what's happening with Bears special teams?
It's you know what the crazy part about that is that Devin Hester was celebrated, you know, a week or two weeks ago, and we're talking about how bad our special teams is right now. It boggles me that our opponents seem to know more about our kicking team than our team does. And I don't understand it. Like, the teams are saying, we knew that we would have a chance to get a kick, that would to get a block on this kicker. He has a low trajectory. Oh, well, we wanted to kick the ball on second down, you know, or on third down, not try to help get to the right hash or not try to get more yards. So there are some things that are going on that says, you know, it's not just Eberflus, it's the people that are around him, but the people that are around him are the people that he picked.
Yeah, man. I mean, the fact that you can get a field goal blocked at the end of that Green Bay game, have it be as much of a firestorm inside and outside the building as it was, and then have the same personnel out there and have it blocked again from the same spot on the line the next game, that's embarrassing. I see you shaking your head. And they didn't change personnel until after that. So they thought they could coach it up still and got proven wrong immediately. That's nuts, isn't it?
They thought they could just say, hey, man, you missed that block. I need you to scoot down and dig in there, okay? Dig in there. And it was going to work. It's going to take a little bit more than that, buddy.
It's going to take a lot more than that. Boogie, as always, man, we love you. We appreciate you. Continue to keep doing what you're doing. And thanks for joining us.
You got it, fellas. Out here enjoying a Hampton Social.
Yeah, that's where that is. Oh yeah. Get you. Post that. Post that on IG, baby. Yeah. That place is built for IG.
Mm-hmm. Look at this man. Fellas. Out here having some seafood, enjoying himself at the bar.
My goodness.
The life of Lance Briggs. Let me tell you something.
To be in here working hard like us.
No, he's got it right.
Yeah, no.
Like that's
He already did the hard work thing.
He's got it right. So is the goal every week for you with Lance to get awkward, or is it just happening?
It's just a gift. It's what it is. Lawrence, I mean, some people.
Lance, you got a big butt. Did your mom also have a big butt? She have a big butt too?
That is an unfair characterization.
How big were her hands?
That is an unfair characterization of how that went. I was talking about the torso, and he's the one who took it to the big booty. But a texter does point out that I did ask Lance if he is, quote, still thick in that way.
Yeah.
And I did.
It's a little weird.
That's all right.
At least you didn't say thick with two C's, because then it would have been very strange.
I didn't even imply that. You inferred that. That's on you, dirty-minded man.
You were talking about how he was barrel-chested, and then he started talking about his mom and sisters. I'm like, whoa, where are we going with this?
I know.
Alex, that is the correct response by you.
Trying to get to real moments with these people.
I'm going to get Boogie in here. We should do something with Boogie like we do with Wani.
Oh, I'd love that.
I'll figure out like what drink he wants. We'll tend it up, and we'll bring him in here for an hour.
I'm in. Let's do it. We've got cool stuff coming up later. Jason Leisure at 4. Kenny Mayne is going to join us at 5 o'clock. I have a story about the first time that I saw Kenny Mayne on television that I can't wait to tell him on this radio show.
That's super cool.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of his.
Me too.
And I can't wait for us to talk to him. Chris Emma is going to join us next with a Bears hit. He's got stuff from Hallis Hall that you need to hear. It's next on The Score.